The jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And this is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is a snowy Monday. It's Monday, January 18th, 2016. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located in beautiful, snowy, well, blizzard-like northwest Pennsylvania, where we've got about a foot and a half on the ground and more coming, and we can't see basically our hands in front of our faces. Hopefully that will not affect our broadcast. I don't think so. We've got satellites up and working, so this is all good. Folks, we broadcast live every Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. That's our flagship station. And of course, you can hear us live as well at Blog Talk Radio. On Blog Talk Radio, and also you can watch us. We're simulcast not only on Blog Talk, but you can watch us on our official YouTube channel. Just go to HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link directly to our YouTube channel there. That's HagmanandHagman.com for reports, information, and articles, HagmanReport.com and HomelandSecurityUS.com. Three websites to choose from, all doing a different function, and of course, ready I'll do a different function providing you information. So our flagship website for this show, HagmanandHagman.com. I'm Doug Hagman, and in case you don't know, at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report together. Just want to tell you, we've got a great show for you lined up tonight. Joe, you can go ahead and bring on the guests.
Yeah, it's great to be here. As my dad said, it's a very snowy day out there, and it is still coming for those of you up in the northeast here dealing with the snow. But we got a great show for you tonight. We got economist Ross Powell tonight with Steve Quayle for the whole 3 hours tonight. And we're going to turn it over to you, Steve, and let you get started where you want to go.
Well, thank you so much, Joe and Doug and Ross. Nice to be with you. I think tonight is really a critical night because for all the years that everything has been in play and all of the events that were taking place almost two decades ago, everything used to be in the future tense. But I want to encourage people to really listen with their hearts to what's being said, because people have become desensitized to the reality. And I'll share this. I believe that the words, and these are just a few of them, collapse, crisis, panic, cataclysm, financial meltdown, day of reckoning, all those words have lost their meaning due to overusage and due to MK Ultra. Now, I want to share this. It's critical that those of you who have not been to my website tonight or today, go and look at the MK Ultra background. You must understand how that has come about. Most people, Doug, and you know this, Ross and Joe, you encounter it every day, they just don't understand how the country could have come to this point. They don't understand, how do I say this? They don't understand the full ramifications of the lifestyle. I'm really choosing my words carefully, you guys. The lifestyle, everything that we've known as normal, everything we've taken for granted, most importantly, the living God, all the blessings we have received at the hands of a living God and a loving living God, the enemy of men's souls hates that. You know, when Jesus said the love of money is the root of all evil, he didn't say money was the root of all evil. He even told us to make friends of the unrighteous mammon so that when God gave us the true riches, we'd know how to handle it. It's interesting that faithfulness in the small things carries through into faithfulness in large things. What Ross is going to talk about tonight, and I'll chime in, is the fact that there are events taking place that even if you put them into the context of 2008, the last, really crisis period, every single event that led to the economic collapse, the disintegration of small business started then, and now the Baltic Dry Index, Ross will explain all that. What we're seeing is God bringing the nation to a standstill. Retail is finished. It's over as you've known it. McDonald's, what, closed 1,000 stores? Walmart, 269 stores. And by the way, that's a number we'll deal with later in the show. But what we're seeing is the Illuminati signature all across the world. Global upheaval. Let me make this simple. Every nation state is to disappear, to be turned into a specific region. As Michael Savage has brilliantly said over and over, borders, language, culture, national identity is being merged into this giant globular cluster called the New World Order. And anyone who doesn't take the Luciferic initiation, according to David Spangler, gets to be murdered. You won't enter into this New World Order without that, what would you say, initiation. So I'm going to turn it over to Ross, but ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand what's at stake here. Those of you who are parents and have kids, their futures. Those of you who are grandparents and have grandchildren. And this isn't doom porn. The Lord rebuke those people that use that word. Whenever people can't handle the ramifications of what they have denied, the only way they can respond emotionally, and certainly not intellectually, is to attack the messengers. Everything Ross and I will talk about tonight is a matter of record, but think about this. Think about how many times you've heard the word collapse, crisis, panic, yet all of that doesn't mean anything to the majority of the people in the United States. Now, obviously, it means something to preppers and people who understand the wise man sees evil coming and hides himself from it. So, Ross, let's go immediately now to the things that you absolutely are seeing that you've never seen before, and obviously your goal is to help people get out of financial harm's way, but if they choose to get run over by a steamroller, that's their decision. Go ahead, Ross.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Doug and Joe, for having me on the show tonight. Steve, you're dead on, and when you're talking about desensitizing folks to words, and that's intentional by a lot of ways. If you see enough movies with murder or you play video games with murder, it becomes nothing to you until you actually see a dead body. So what we're facing is, with the general public, is what's called normalcy bias. And it's everything which you've been told all your life. It's what you hear on the TV set, you hear on the radio, movies. Everybody thinks everything is hunky-dory, when in fact it's not. And so the next step from that is going into what's called cognitive dissonance, and that's where your whole balloon goes up, and it's sort of taking the red pill in the matrix. And that's what I use many times when I'm talking to our customers, is you're going through the matrix mode of taking the red pill, and it's not what you think it is. And it many times will make people's heads pop, and they just can't deal with it. And so when you start moving from normalcy bias to cognitive dissonance, some people move ahead and break through and learn, and they become awake. Others fall back and say, I just can't deal with it. That's not true. I'm going to just ignore it and get back to my six-pack and my TV shows. And so hopefully the listeners tonight will break through the normalcy bias and into face the cognitive dissonance, but we have to tell them, because there's a lot of different moving parts. And every time I come on the show, is there's a lot of different pieces. All of them individually mean nothing, but when you weave them into a macrame, or into a tapestry, it comes and gives you a full picture. And so I just want to start hitting some things and things that people recognize right away. And that's the price of oil. And so I was just up until now, the oil was down at 28 and some change, 28.78 on the West Texas, and then the Brent was even lower. It's popping up and down, but it's still staying, the resistance still is back at 30. So many people are saying the oil is going to go down to 20, to 15, to 10. And so people go, oh, yay, the gas pump's going to be less. And there's actually stations in Michigan who are selling gas today in the 70 cents to 80 cents in a price war, which haven't seen since the 60s and 70s. So people are selling gas for, in some places, 55 cents to 65 cents a gallon. Unheard of. I haven't seen that since I was in the 78 in high school. So that, maybe think, oh, that's awesome. But they don't realize what that does from a ripple effect within the economy. All of this, up until recently, when the oil started to take a major slide at the middle of last year, we were almost energy independent. I would say for 3 to 6 months, we were probably energy independent. because all the shale and everything was pumping, we were actually ready. That's why they passed the bill for Texas too and other states to export oil directly and have, not having to go through a centralized place. Individual states could now export their own oil, which was going to be a boon for Texas. And so now with this bust, it's changed all the rules. And so we were almost energy independent, or were for a short period of time. Then the Saudis put their pressure on, and then we were trying to play the strategy that, oh yeah, well, it's just the Russians are using the oil pricing to build up their military, and so we're at a de facto state of war with them, essentially, in another Cold War, or I would call it a colder war, because I think back in those days we had what was called a mutual assured destruction. That doctrine is way out the window, and Putin's already said he has no problem using a first strike to take care of business. So now we're in even a colder war, and now they think, well, we're going to destroy them with bringing their oil revenues down. But nobody, either they intentionally or in cahoots with Middle Eastern countries, they brought this number down, and the break-even price for shale oil is probably around $50, depending on the operator. It could be as low as 30 for some of the more efficient ones. So now you have oil companies going belly up. I can tell you in Texas, where we are, at the height of, back in the early 15, there was 190 rigs running across the state of Texas. Today there's 60 or less, and they're dropping day by day. And so you think about that, and that impacts not just the oil rigs and the workers on the rigs. That's unemployment right there. But there's people that provide water, people provide piping, trucking, housing, food, all kinds of other administrative kind of things. And all those people are pretty much out the window too. If you used to see a boomtown driving down towards Corpus or towards Laredo over the last 2 years, you couldn't believe the amount of building. You couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting some kind of rig or some kind of oil industry related new building, including what I would call shanty type houses for these guys to live in that were thrown up so quickly while they were building something more permanent. And now all those businesses are gone. All those little towns are sucking wind. The state is not getting those tax revenues. And that's not just happening in Texas. It's happening in North Dakota, in Oklahoma, many where the boom areas. It's bust now. So the unemployment is huge. But take it a step further and think of all the money that was lent to make that expansion. The banks have huge books of business in the oil industry. The Texas banks, North Dakota banks, large banks, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wachovia, Bank of America is a big one. So all of these big banks took huge risks and said, well, there's a lot of money to be made. And there was, and people made a lot of money. I was talking to a friend today. He has a gentleman that he works with, or is a friend of his, was made $850,000 last year just in royalty checks alone, plus his leases. Now he's looking for a job. So this has a huge impact on everybody. But think about the banks. So you lend a bunch of money now that, and there was a law, I'll digress just for a second, there was a law passed called Mark to Market. And so it essentially, it started in 2009, and it pretty much came to fruition in October of 2015, just when the things started to collapse. And so now the oil companies used to be able to use the reserves that are in the ground. They know that they have X million barrels of oil in this particular well. That is considered collateral because it's a reserve. They're going to pump it out of the ground eventually over some period of time, and the banks could use that as collateral. When this rule came up and they actually were able to, they took it away and said that collateral no longer exists. So now the oil company has a collateral issue. It's almost like a margin call that said, well, you need to do something to bring this collateral back up in order to keep this loan active, or they're going to make them default. And so now we're looking at numerous companies defaulting or actually have defaulted. I know one bank in South Texas that has a major client or a major loan holder, and they're like 40% of their book of business. This one's is just about to go belly up. What would that do if you lost 40%? You took a loss on 40% of your loan book. What would that do to your bank? Probably bring it down to its knees and close it. So these things have a ripple effect. It's almost like the mortgage business of 2008, except it's worse because it's broader spectrum. It's not just housing mortgages. It affects a lot of people and a lot of ripples. So with this, that means that with the latest banking in 2010, where they passed a law, there is no more bailouts. Everything is a bail-in. You can see the writing on the wall. So if the banks are going to collapse and the Fed passed in December their last minutes that they adopted those new laws so that the Fed can't do bailouts any longer, so their hands are tied behind their back. So they can't suddenly just issue a bunch of money to all these big banks to cover their losses, theoretically anyway. That's how the law is written. But when he who has the gold makes the rules, so if they could obviously change that, we just heard one on, I read a story on Zero Hedge today and yesterday, it's ongoing, where the Dallas Fed has said that with these big losses on your books, and this is met with a bunch of Dallas with a bunch of Texas banks and others, saying, well, don't make them go to foreclosure, don't make them default, do things like sell their assets, do something else. If the last step here is ignore the mark to market price, so which means they can bring that equity back up and those reserves back up, but that will cover for the short term. So the shell game, this three card Monte, is working again just like it did in 2008, again, except it's going to be much worse. So Steve, the my biggest concern right now is, well, one of them is the oil, and it's the unemployment that goes along with it. The government just released. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Russ. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
So the next thing is that affects unemployment. So one of the things I keep track of is the unemployment rates, because you see, well, the unemployment's at 5%. Then you see we dig into the numbers, and the population that's employed or is actually part of the workforce is at its lowest level since the 70s. And so you go and dig deeper, and there's two different numbers. There is a U3 number and a U6 number. The U3 number is what they always publicize at 5%. And so most people can look this up, look up U3 versus U6 on Google it or whatever browser or search engine you want to use. But if you look at that, the U3 number is 5%. That's people that are actively involved when they do their 33,000 calls and they talk to all these folks. 5% of the people said they're unemployed. But you take that, the actual U6 number, which people that are only part-time workers because they can't find a full-time job or they have a second job for economic reasons, they've given up hope, they're even just remotely attached to the employment situation, that number is at 9.9. It was in 12 and 13, it was in the 18% range, 20% range. So it's come down significantly. But just think about that. 1 in 10 people, conceivably, at 10%, is unemployed. So what is that, to your point earlier, retail, what does that do to retail? Walmart's closing stores. McDonald's is closing, 1,000 stores. Gap is closed. All these different companies, all these retailers had a terrible December. That big push in December didn't happen. Amazon had a great year, relatively speaking, to the retail, to the brick and mortars. But the folks that the overall retail is in the tank. So people aren't spending their money. Their debt is going up. So, again, we're just getting right back into that 2008 cycle, Steve and Doug, that is not good. So we're going to get to, like, the Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns kind of situation, except it's going to be caused by something different. It's a global shutdown with China, which I'll get to in a moment. But oil is a huge thing. I mean, but it's pushing us towards deflation, which is bad for everybody, and it's not – that's really hard to get out of. So, Steve, did you have a comment? I'll go ahead and turn it over to you for a moment.
Yeah. I think the one of the most critical and telling numbers is not statistics or charts, Ross. It's the Baltic Dry Index. The Baltic Dry Index is just a composite, a tabulation, if you will, of how many ships are coming in with freight, how many ships are coming in, importing products into this country, obviously products going out of this country and exports. But one of the telling things about the Baltic Dry Index is basically, I'll make this statement, and is people can't understand how it filters through to the trucking industry. Now, truckers understand it. I get truckers' emails every day. I have a lot of truckers that listen to this program, either real downloaded or wherever they're at. But the point is that they can't deliver goods. Well, we've become a service-oriented society. Listen, a PhD in whatever venue of education, he's got to feed his family too, just as a plumber or a carpenter or any of the builders, people who actually add value. So when you see the Baltic Dry Index going lower, lower, lower. And we were speculating, ladies and gentlemen, that we wouldn't be surprised to see a 322, which is obviously, Doug said that, the Illuminati number, and I said I wouldn't be surprised if it's 333. So it's still falling today. What was it, Ross, 369?
Right, 369 as of the start of this program, which was down from 373 on Friday when I looked it up, which was down
now,
the high of this last...
Yeah, let me just go there really quick. Look at this. I want you to see, and ladies and gentlemen, this is about teaching. Ross is the guy who's going to give you the financial stuff. But notice 369, notice the 69. Notice how many Walmart stores are closing. 269. Why not 270? Why not 250? No. Look at this. Look at David Bowie. David Bowie, basic, really into the black arts, really into Satanism. His newest album, Black Star. Black Star directly relates also to the Nazis' Black Sun. Now, what's critical, and then Alan Rickman, the actor who was in Harry Potter, he also died at 69. Okay? They all died, both of them died at 69. So the point is no. Yeah, so there's a 69. Now, I want to share something, okay? And I want people to know that there are a lot of people that come on the scene. I'm going to turn right back after you after I read a certain segment. In 1992, June 27th, I received a word from the Lord. Now, the way you know if a word is from the Lord, you take it to the Lord and you see if it's fulfilled. The problem with Christians is they think if a word is given, a word is given, that if it doesn't come to pass in the immediate future, that's not a true word. And listen to this, okay? And this is on my website in the prophetic words. It's in the 1992. The government of your land worships at the altars of mammon. The evil they do is an affront to my righteousness and an attack on my throne. And now hear their judgment. In one day, I will bring down their financial system. The entire world will stand in awe. The politicians will run to and fro, unable to do anything to stop the onslaught of my judgment. Your country will come to a virtual standstill. No planes will fly. No trucks will run. No trains will run. As food runs out, millions will flee the cities as drought and famine begin to take hold. Total chaos will ensue. Panic will break forth, and there will be much death and sorrow. Those who fall in the city, as they die, plague will break forth and pestilence will follow. Millions will wander your highways and byways searching for food just to continue living. Now, that's 28 years ago. 28 years ago. And, 24 years ago. There's an earlier one that I got confused on, 1987. So the point is that what I'm trying to say, Ross, Doug, and Joe, that's going to come to pass. And everybody's too busy to even begin to imagine the fact, or would not even acknowledge that was, quote, a true word of the Lord. Now, people can say, I don't believe it. Well, fine, you don't. But the point is, it's going to come to pass. So I think the critical word here that I can't articulate, maybe you can, Doug or Joe, jump in, or Ross, the word panic. Okay, the word panic is such a word that you'd think it would be it wouldn't be necessary to try and define it. Yet because of the overuse of it and the numbing and dumbing of the desensitization of it, people don't get it. Doug, do you want to describe? Here's a good thing, and Ross, I hope you don't mind, but Doug, when I say the word panic, or Joe, you know, chime in after your dad, what do you think of? What is the mental picture you get?
Oh, Steve, chaos. But Ross said something extremely important, I think. You know, you can say, you can talk about murder statistics all day long, and until you actually see or have been at a murder scene, it doesn't register. I mean, it's just a thing. It's a number. It's a concept. So panic, to me, and I'll toss it to Joe after this, to me is something that you are caught in chaos that you've got no control over. You're a pinball on the pinball machine. And let me tell you something, it ain't fun.
And I'll piggyback off what my dad said, except I'll classify it in two ways. You have the individual panic, where one person's in a situation that is panicking for whatever threat they're facing, or you have mass panic, which is societal chaos, which is what my father was explaining, where you're basically a pinball caught in a wave of things going on around you that are unstable and your life's in danger.
I would add the word pandemonium.
There you go.
Complete pandemonium. Think of the riots in the Northeast and in Missouri and things like that times 10, where everybody, it's every man for himself. I don't know how many of you played sports, or not sports, but just playing outside when you were growing up. But you say that, I'm sure it's politically correct to say that somebody killed a man with a football. So when you're just, everybody's out for themselves and trying to win, that's panic, where you're just looking at your three children sitting, I'm hungry, mommy, I'm hungry, daddy, but you have nothing to give them. So what are you going to do? That pressure will make your head pop. So you're going to go out and secure those, whatever you need to feed your family or to give them water, or if they need, or if they need medication, you'll do anything and everything to protect your loved ones. Up to and including whacking somebody with whatever weapon you may have, or you may have guns, or you may have a knife, or you may have a baseball bat, or whatever it's going to take for you to acquire that which you need. And on the other end of that, somebody is going to have the same, well, you're not going to come and get mine, pound sand, go away, and then that will ensue into a physical altercation, but on a very large scale. So
that's right.
That's when you talk about that panic, Steve. If you think about, I mean, there's old movies that show panic scenes and people running, and you'll, I remember when a movie that was back in the 80s, I think it was The Day After, and it showed these people running down the street because the nukes were coming or went off and people were running or the sirens were going up, and they were just running over each other, backing into cars, backing over people, just trying to flee like scared sheep and goats. And so that's what panic really means, but nobody's really experienced that here. Think about 9/11, the panic in New York City. That created just a complete sucking of the air out of the room, literally and figuratively. So that gets us to, and Steve, to your, I'll bring us back around to the Baltic Dry Index. That number 369 is the 52-week range to tell you where we are. The 52-week range, just since January now to January of last year, it was at 1222. This time, or during the period, that 1 year period is the high. Today it's 369. It's probably going to continue to go down. So that it means all the iron ore, coal, shipping containers full of, you know, merchandise that none of us really need anymore. It does not include oil. That's a separate measure. So, but all of the dry goods, all of the, could be wheat, could be corn, could be a litany of things that's moving, tells you how many ships are moving between all the different countries around the world. That's global trade. Global trade has come to a stop. And what's causing that is there is an underlying credit crunch, just like there was in 2008, except it's getting worse because they're running out of ammo in their quiver, arrows in their quiver. So the money that each of the company are trying to hold on to their cash, billionaires are stocking up on cash, sovereign countries are sitting on cash. So they don't want to release it because they know they're going to need it. And I would suggest that to our listeners that they need to have cash or liquidity in their own homes as well, but that's another topic. So to your point, Steve, panic is not just something you see on a TV show when a great big the blob comes running through your house or there's some other TV show or you're getting whacked in a video game. Panic is real, and it's bloody, and it's awful. Until you actually feel it, and that adrenaline, that rush, that's the fight or flee, comes running through you, you'll never know what real panic is.
And again, the word, I think the thing that what people lose track of in all these warnings, all warnings are to motivate you to act in your own behalf. You know, Doug, years ago, and being one of the guys who started the PrEP movement, you know, 25, actually 30 years ago, the thing is that I coined the term life assurance, okay? Because everybody knows what life insurance is. So what Ross is trying to get across to everybody, and I am too, and I'm praying that we communicate so clearly, is that there's nobody coming to the rescue. They intend, the globalists, tend to introduce maximum mayhem. And maximum mayhem can be this. And the best way I can describe it, Ross, and I'll share this, Doug, I think I have, and Joe, is that most people, when they're in a difficult situation, they either have something coming from them before them, in other words, in front of them, from behind them, from the side of them, from either side, right or left side. And now, in this day and age, with everything from the earthquakes that are happening, the volcanic explosions, the subduction zone issues on the Washington-Oregon coast, all of the things coming, now it's like this. Here's how I would describe it, you guys. You look ahead of you, and you see events that are approaching with the speed of a freight train. You look behind you and there are people chasing you literally for your life, for your substance, and for whatever, quote, prepping supplies. You look to the right, you look to the left, and you look up above, you look beneath, and all that stuff. And at that point, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? You know, the Bible in Jeremiah, and this is a cool thing, basically God says to people, when you're confronted with that which is greater than you are, how are you going to deal with the swelling of Jordan and basically the armies that are coming behind you? In other words, he's saying, when you're cut off from all places to run to, when you're cut off from all sustenance, who are you going to look to? Well, the answer to that is the living God, okay? Because I want to make it clear tonight, what we're laying out to you, you should see not as doom and gloom. You should see it as this. You should see it that God has made his position clear that he loves his creation. If the wisest guy in the world, says Solomon, the wise man sees evil coming and hides himself from it, what Ross just said to everybody, listen, let me make it clear. They have passed the laws that everything in banks is now theirs. Is that correct, Ross?
Yes. Yes.
Will you explain the difference between an insured depositor and an unsecured lender, please? I don't think 90% of people out there know that the laws changed, and explain that if you would.
Sure. I mean, the law passed, it was in 2010, and essentially, before that law, you were an insured depositor, meaning that you were what I would call a liability on their balance sheet. So they had to pay you. You were secured. You would always get your money out. You put the money in the bank. They owed it back to you. Now you are an unsecured creditor, meaning that so that when you put your money in, let's say you go and deposit a check for $1,000, that money now belongs to the bank. It says your name on it. It's essentially an IOU now. So I will promise to pay you back that money when you want it, so that along with what's called a DDA account, a demand deposit account, that title hasn't changed. But what it means, though, is that you are unsecured. You're an unsecured creditor, meaning that you gave the money to the bank. Essentially, you loaned it to them, and they're going to give you a basis point or 2 basis points for your checking account, paying you interest on it. And so, but if you want that money and they don't have it, they can say, no, you can't have it. So if the bank does a bail-in, meaning that they're going to take your deposit, they could give you a haircut like they did in Greece, and you have no recourse. So many people have probably got new statements in the mail saying, here's your new terms of your deposit account. They changed all the write-ups in all the major banks that I know of. At least I know they did at Chase when I worked there and other banks. So nobody reads those terms. Nobody even looks at it until somebody tells them that now you're an unsecured creditor. So people that are ahead of you are other banks and the Fed and major corporations, whoever that can or ahead of you in line. You're sort of at the bottom of the barrel. So when they get down to the bottom, they'll pay you if they can. Now, they all say, well, you have FDIC insurance up to $250,000. Now, that's true. You do have that. But when the funding authority for that only has enough to really fund that maybe 1% or 2% of that number, you're left holding the bag. So if they do a bail-in like Greece, you really have nothing you can do about it. You're going to get a haircut. So in the event that these oil loans and other oil-related industry loans, could be for rigs, it could be for trucks, could be for piping, paying bills, paying payroll, when those loans go belly up, guess who's holding the bag? Not just the banks, but you are holding the bag now, because you are unsecured creditor to the oil industry as well, because your money was used to lend to them and expecting a nice return, and they would make their spread and pay you your two or three basis points and make money and show great profits in each quarter. So, but that's in the worst case scenario, everybody's holding the bag anymore. So that's the bigger difference. You were a liability versus a creditor. So before you were required to be paid, now you don't have to be paid. You're secondary.
So let me add this to put it into perspective for everyone. That means that if there are deals on the books, meaning banks are speculating, banks are investing, anything that causes the bank to have a loss, you are proportionately responsible for that loss. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And so,
that was the Dodd-Frank Act. That was the Dodd-Frank Act, if people want to look it up.
Yep. So the point that I guess that's really critical right now is to understand that that's a huge change. Yet, you know what? I explain that to a lot of people. Some of them are mutual clients, Roth, and some of them get it. But you know, when I talk to the average person, they shrug their shoulders. They shrug their shoulders. And so when we're talking about, look, jobs, the crashing of the oil and coal business, hello, does anybody think that's going to be good for this country? The fallacious lies that somehow ethanol would save this country, or wind energy, or solar, hello, does anybody get it? So I guess the thing is, it's kind of this. You can either put your hands in the lying, adulterous, perverse system, or you can start to take control of your own lives. I can tell you this, after being, I don't know, 20, however long I've been on talk radio, and Doug, I'm sorry this is a bad attitude, but I don't even care anymore. I've just gone through, and Todd, you'll appreciate this, buckets and buckets of the CDs and tapes that, you know, you've gone through to get up my archives, and when they come up, we'll tell people. Those are all the shows I've ever done. And, you know, what you look at, Doug, and you'll do this in retrospect someday too, or Joe will, or whoever, you know, follows you, and I'm not speaking about an untimely death, but same thing with you, Ross. What we leave to the next generation, you know, the Bible says they served their generation well. The Bible also talks about those who pillage their generation. How many years, Ross, have others, you included me, been saying, we're literally eating up our children and grandchildren's future? But that even that people don't understand. You want to comment on that? I think what I'm trying to do, Ross, is get people to understand it is their short, the short span of time. So go ahead and answer that if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. I mean, the fact that the amount of debt that we have in this country is unsustainable. For instance, the $19 going on $20 trillion that was pushed through, hammered through by the anointed Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. And then gave everything to Obama just like Harry Reid would have. So that $20 trillion debt is unpayable. I mean, there's unserviceable. So when you start to see them creeping up interest rates, you start to see treasury rates have started going down again because we can't service that debt. So when we spend ourselves into oblivion, that's essentially saying, okay, when I die, I'm going to leave you $300,000 worth of debt to my children, but you need to pay that off because I don't care because I'm dead anyways. You guys need to pay it off. And that's essentially what we're doing. So instead of leaving your children an inheritance and a nest egg and a college education for your grandkids or your great-grandkids or a beach house or whatever you think you want to leave to them, what the government is doing and doing it to you is that they're essentially tying the hands of your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren at this point to a point of slavery where they're never going to be able to pay this debt back. So I have 25, 30 years, God willing, to live longer at my age. But after that, my kids take it on and my grandkids take it on and they take it on. It'll never get paid back. So we've enslaved ourselves with debt. And nobody really seems to care. That's just like falling on deaf ears. That's that normalcy bias. Well, there's nothing we can do about it. And they embrace different candidates that talk the talk and say this different thing, but nothing ever changes. We vote different people in. Yeah, we're going to stop this, but they just grease the skids and move it on. Everybody gets co-opted and does the same thing. So in the revolving door between corporations and government and financial and banks and Treasury Department, you know, how many, you can go and look at it, how many times has the Treasury Secretary in the modern era not been a Goldman Sachs employee formally? Either a chairman or a senior vice president or some investment banker. Big piece of Goldman Sachs has always been the next Treasury Secretary. Even Bernie Sanders said, no, Goldman Sachs will not be my Treasury Secretary if I get elected. So he must say that for a reason. I'm not proposing it. I'm not, you know, for any of these candidates. But at the end of the day, we have to think through what we're doing. What are you leaving the next generation? If you're selfish and narcissistic and you don't care, well, I can't help you. But if you want to be altruistic and you want to help your children, you want to help your neighbor and your community, things need to change. And can you change it at the $20 trillion level? Probably not. You can probably change it for your family, for your friends and your church members and neighbors and things, but you can't do it on a global scale. It's just you don't have the wherewithal. So that's where people say, well, they shrug their shoulders. You said, Stephen, there's nothing I can do about it. You can do it at a micro level. You can't do it at the macro level necessarily unless there's a groundswell of people voting somebody that can make it through the gauntlet to get to where they could even become president or be somebody in Congress where you thought you did, but they get co-opted. How do you change that? It's beyond my pay grade. I don't know how to change it. I wish I could tell folks how to do that. You can vote at the polls, but if you can't get somebody to vote for that's not going to just kind of carry the flag on, you got no shot. So it can be frustrating, but you can do it at a micro level in your own sphere of influence, in your home and your neighbors and community.
And I think that leads into the whole Chinese issue, because again, if we look back over everything that's been on talk radio for the past quarter of a century, you know, that I've been talking about, others have been talking about, it's not that it's about those of us who have been doing it, it's about we're at the place now where when the Pope talks about a one world religion, people want to argue, well, you know, he doesn't really mean that. When he puts up a high quality production, he really does mean that. People have to rethink when they're talking about a global ID card. We can't do anything. Ross, here's a proverb. And I love quoting Solomon before he, you know, went wacky, but he said, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And I'm telling you, here's the problem. Here's the disconnect. And I'll turn it right over to you, Ross, to go into the Sino-American Economic War. The fact is that the foundations of this country are destroyed. The very principles embodied in the Star Spangled Banner. Yet people still shake their head. They get all caught up in the politics, and yet they don't recognize this. You can't build something new on a foundation that's crumbled. So the Sino-American Economic War of Attrition, that's what's going on right now, and China is calling the U.S. bluff. Vladimir Putin is demonstrating, you know, he's a man of action, not a man of par four golfer. I don't know anything about golf. Forgive me, golfers. So, you know, foreign policy can't be won, and military decisions can't be made on a whim, yet that's what's happening. Listen, America is self-destructing. People yell at me when I say that. I can challenge anybody who can tell me. You know, it's fascinating. Let's say some guy has 100 dreams, 100 visions every, you know, week, and he posts them. And yet, they're as dire as what we say, but when we say them, somehow it's selling fear to sell this, that, or the other thing. Well, let me share this. When you buy life insurance, you go out and you spend whatever it takes to cover your family. In the case of your untimely demise, or you know that your time is up. Because you care about them, you care about the next generation. That's gone. And now China, the history of China is a fascinating study, because, you know, we go back to 1776, you go back to China, you can deal with dynasties that are 2,000 years old, where they understood the basics of what money is. And when the Chinese tried to print silk money, guess what? Those guys didn't last very long. So let's talk right now, the Sino-American Economic War, Ross, I'll turn it right over to you, because again, the Chinese are buying up everything pretty much on the West Coast.
And
Steve and Russ, if I could jump in here, the president said something during the State of the Union. He said something, and I'm paraphrasing, along the lines of, anybody who says we're in an economic downturn is peddling fiction. What do you have to say to that?
No, I consider the Soviet Union fiction as well, but that's okay.
Well, let me say this. I'm not the one on a blue bicycle eating an ice cream cone with a crash helmet on while Vladimir Putin is diving into the Black Sea. Or, you know, look, I'm not just saying this. I'm saying the world's perception of that guy that you just named is one of weakness and freakness. Now, the thing is that the total disrespect that the world, and I went on your show years ago and talked about that the United States would become a hissing in the nostrils of those countries around about. You know, there are even headlines using those terms. I'm not saying they're listening to us. I hope they are, but, you know, so what I'm saying, Joe, is that is as relevant, okay, is a vampire saying, I've switched from blood to water. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. And he certainly doesn't believe that because, look, the only thing that gives the power to even make an insane statement like that is the power of the printing press. The rest of the world, Ross is going to deal with it. You know, China, Russia, they don't want the U.S. dollar. They're not dealing with it. Saudis, they're not dealing with it anymore. So this whole idea of crashing oil prices, the whole idea of China buying all the gold, and I think, too, Ross, it's fascinating that you know, when you're quoting The Art of War, China's not going to tell the world how much gold they have until they're ready to revalue it. So go ahead and talk about China, because I don't think the average American even can fathom what it means when China is doing, or what it means as China is doing what it's doing. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. The big day is tomorrow, actually, Tuesday. The Chinese are going to release their GDP for 2015. They've been posturing it or framing it as going to be in the 6.7 range. But they also do overnight devaluations of their currency, which unsettles the entire world economy. If it's anything less than that, people that I read and I talk to think it's going to be in the 3-4% range, it really is. They may say it's 6, but it really is 3. And the reason I believe that is I have a customer that lives in China as an expat. He does business over there. And I set up him an account. He moved his retirement money out many, many months ago. And really glad he did, actually. But he travels all over the country, and I'm going to read you verbatim what he said in his email to me. He goes, the thing that it continues to amaze me is the construction here in China. In the area where I live, about 900 acres, they are about 75% complete on 25 new 30-story high-rise buildings, all empty, probably on 7 acres. He goes, I can stand at this location and view similar projects within a mile. He does a lot of travel by train. He sees it all over the place in China. And he says the locals look at him in a blank stare like, who the hell is going to buy these things? So what's actually happening, and it just dawned on me after I read his email, and then I thought about it and just had an epiphany, I don't know, maybe on Friday, it came to me, is that drives GDP. If you're building construction and you're using up all these materials and you're building these buildings and putting up these homes, and even though there's nobody to live in them, that's creating GDP. So it's false GDP, but it can say they're using it for that. And so by faking the numbers and just building up empty buildings that they could just, I guess, go back and knock down again then and rebuild them again, there's your GDP. And so it just baffles me. And this is eyewitness. That was verbatim from an eyewitness in China, an American. So that kind of thing tells me that the dew is off the rose. There was more to the eye than that's being either seen or told. And I'm because of the number of the way the market is going, the capital flee from China. And back in October, I told this audience that the Chinese will get their SDR. And there was a lot of finagling in the backboard, and there was a bunch of shots over the bow during the months ensuing before that, before the December decision. But I said that they're doing the Fed's going to raise the rates, and they did a quarter point like we projected. And since they did that, a lot of money from China is moving in onshore here. And as Steve said, they're buying anything and everything that's not nailed down on the West Coast, on the East Coast, in the belts, in the farm belts, everywhere. They're buying stuff as much as they can because they know that the shoe's going to drop. They want hard assets, just like we tell people they need to get hard assets. They're not putting it in renminbi. They're not putting it in dollars. They're exiting out of all that and putting into hard assets, things that's going to be productive, like farmland or places where people have to live. So they're exiting, and they've had to put so many capital controls And the Chinese had a great way of moving money around into different areas and move the money. It's almost like money laundering around their different areas and then getting out of the country. Numerous billionaires have disappeared. In China, they just suddenly disappeared. You have the person that's running the stock market in China is their call for his resignation. He's offered his resignation. I haven't heard whether he took it or not. But you see this huge volatility in China dropped off several trillion dollars of money out of the Chinese market, and which obviously equates to people. And so everybody's getting really irritated. Like you told us, and then they have people locked in. They can't even sell their holdings because they told you can't sell it because it's going to bring the market down. So what if you, let's say that you owned 1,000 shares of Exxon and you'd see it tanking from 250 to 2 to 150 to 1. You're trying to get out. They said, no, you can't sell it, and you watch your money just drip away down to $20. So that's where these people are locked in. So those the folks in China are the individual, just like you and I and Joe and Doug and their listeners, are just pawns in this because there's much bigger, more nefarious powers involved that are playing this big game of petrodollar. But essentially this is coming to the, because there's this whole roar of attrition I've been talking about since, I guess, May of last year. Is heated up to the point where it's destroying both sides, as that mutual assured destruction aspect is coming about. Our market's taking hits, or the Chinese markets are taking a hit, the other Asian markets are taking a hit, oil's taking a hit. Gold, on the other hand, has come back down, but it's still moving back up again. So it's going to start balancing. Now, gold is manipulated just like anything else, and Steve, you can attest to this. But and I'm digressing a little bit from China, but they're big buyers of gold, and you were talking about the gold hoards that they have. You can watch Americans as the price of gold goes up, people chase it going up, and I think, Steve, you and I have talked about this a couple of times. People chase the price of gold going up and ignoring it as it going down, saying that's a bad investment, when they have it completely reversed. So what happens is gold has run up, it's probably run up to I think it's at 1188, 1190 right now. I can guarantee you in 3 or 4 days it's going to drop again by $15 or $20 because the people that are running it up are shorting it on the other end. So people chase the market, the gold up, the banksters and the people that are manipulating the market short it, they make a ton of money, then they run it up again. It's like an O-scope. You can actually plot this on a graph. You're almost creating a sine wave of lead up and short, lead up and short. So I just want everybody to be cautious because the Chinese are doing the same thing. And you're wondering where I'm going with this, but at the end of the day, you have falsities everywhere in the economy, whether it's Chinese or in the Americas or in Canada. Canadians are suffering big time because of their exchange rate against the dollar. So the Chinese and the Russians are saying, look, we're tired of the American game and the homogeny of the Americans. We're tired of Americans just printing dollars because of the petrodollar from the 70s. So the Chinese and the Russians have created these boards where they can trade in yuan and they can trade in rubles. Putin said last week that no bank should make any transfer for oil, any other commodity, in dollars whatsoever. The Chinese are doing the same thing. So now that the yuan is going to be in the SDR, more and more countries are accepting the yuan as a reserve currency and being able to trade directly with yuan versus having to go through the SWIFT system and transfer one currency to dollars and then dollars into this other currency. They're cutting out the middleman altogether, which just adds more pressure to the petrodollar, and they're trying to get rid of it. And there has been go ahead, Joe.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to let you know we got about a minute before break. So if you want to...
Sure, I'll bring one last thing, and then we can finish and go into break here. But so you have the Russians and the Chinese working to get rid of it. You have the Indians and South Africans and Brazilians, all the BRICS of setting up all this infrastructure to cut the dollar out. And when we come back from the break, I'll give you a real-life story how gold from Dubai just disappeared. People thought it was ripped off or stolen. Turns out they used other currencies to move it and to sell it and to move it, and they avoided the American SWIFT system. They avoided the dollar, which was a huge coup, which was another chink in the armor. So that's all I got.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Monday, January 18th, 2016. Our guest tonight is Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com and Ross Powell, Survival 401k. That's Ross Powell, Survival 401k. We're talking about the globalist Luciferian elite and the economic factors and the Baltic Dry Index and how important it is and the historic lows that we are seeing the index at right now.
Folks, May 2008, the index reached record high. Okay, 11,793 points. That gives you an idea. Okay, Baltic Dry Index, May 20th, 2008, 11,793. What is it right now? 369.
And that's unbelievable numbers. Just a huge drop. And you notice that May 20th, 2008, right before the actual recession and financial chaos we saw here in America, that, you know, created great havoc. We'll be right back after these short messages. Again, Steve Quayle and Ross Powell from Survival 401k are our guests. They'll be here for the whole show. Stay with us for hour number two right after these messages.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.